Hey everyone, let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say yes, and one of them too, I must have this thing. And John, who's just getting over recent surgery, is going to introduce him tonight.
Hey, y'all. I'll introduce him because I've known him for more than 20, maybe 25 years. And I remember this guy could not put together 2 days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was a pimple. But now he's a heck of a lot better. And not only that, he's a great guy. I mean, he's helped me a bunch of times and stuff. I mean, hanging pictures and just... Well, I could tell you, I could just talk on and on about him, but... Nah. We'll just let him do some talking, okay? Yeah. So I'll give you a look at him. The man of mystery.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Tim, and everybody that works to keep this and the other meetings like this going. But I was listening to what he was reading about these accounts and the way we do this, and I'm looking around the room and I see my family. You know, I see my sponsors, my previous sponsors, guys that I sponsor, guys, women that my wife sponsors. I see my first sponsor's wife, who's been following me all these years. Thank you, brother. And wow, you know, when I see, it's just, that's how this happened. Because I didn't really do it. You know, I just kept showing up and making mistakes and showing back up. You know. Anyway, I didn't introduce myself. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Ann. Do they do that? You have to be considerate of me. I have what they call chemo brain. I kind of can forget things in the middle of the sentence. But I was born in Los Angeles in 1950. And I always say this, but I never was really sure because I was only 0 years old. And but it seemed like the country at that time, everybody was kind of moving on up, so to speak. Industrialization was picking up. Everybody had a job. Everybody was buying things that were available to the masses and not just... So it was kind of a sweet time, I think. I wasn't there. You were 12. Maybe you remember a little bit. At any rate, we weren't any different. I had, for those first couple of years, what seemed like, you know, regular kid stuff, you know, growing up. And then late 1952, my older brother caught polio virus, and my mother was pregnant with my younger brother. At some point during this time, she got pregnant by him, with my younger brother. But I only say this to say this kind of change of dynamic of my family at this time, because my father was an alcoholic, and he had a tough time getting along with my mom during this period. And anyway, I ended up being raised mostly by my mother and her parents. and I was kind of thrust into this role early on of being the man of the house, you know, because I was the only able-bodied, you know. So I had a lot of responsibility, which I didn't always fulfill to the best of my ability. And so I ended up at odds with my mom quite a bit, and, you know, in several different ways, and a lot of them kind of affected the way I saw myself. You know, there was verbal abuse and physical abuse, and I kind of started to see myself as to, because she was real smart too, and she would be able to sell these ideas to me about what a bad person I was, and, you know, how wrong I, whatever it is I had done, which I don't doubt any of it. But anyway, it put me at odds with her, and so I started to drift away from the, you know, the model, so to speak, of what our parents try to do for us when we're growing up, you know, give us some morals and implant some ideas on how we live and what's right and what's wrong and stuff. And I was resistant to that, and I started to drift away from that because of various reasons, mainly because I started believing what she was saying, and I started thinking of myself like, I don't really ever really deserve much, and if I ever get anything, I'm probably going to have to steal it. And, you know, we started out stealing cigarettes and little goofy stuff from our grandparents, you know, sneak around behind the garage and smoke cigarettes, shit like that, but eventually... But anyway, push come, let's move right along. I did learn one thing early on, that if I got really good grades, I could stay out of trouble with my mother. And well, I enjoyed getting good grades anyway, but so I figured that out. But what happened was, long about 12 or 13 years old, I worked myself into this. That was a funny thing, I discovered this little pin. I was looking for some political pins that I collected before, but I found this pin that said, "Drugs saved my life." And it showed a dog with a gun, pistol in its ear. And it was kind of like I had worked myself into this state of depression and anxiety, and I didn't see myself as being very happy or fulfilled in my life. I had that teenage, you know, anxious up going, hormones, whatever you want to call it. And then all of a sudden I found myself in a vacant lot with three other buddies of mine, and we all had a quart of malt liquor. And I was about 12 or 13 years old. I think I was 13. But something happened to me when I took that drink. All of a sudden, it didn't bother me, the situation I had at home. It didn't bother my brother was crippled. It didn't bother me that I didn't go along with my mom. It didn't bother me. All of a sudden, and I was funnier than I ever was before, and I knew so much more than I ever was before, and I was two inches taller, and, you know, all these things that I was immediately. Right there, in that vacant lot, you know, there's nothing really glorious about it or anything, you know. It's a vacant damn lot with probably a couple old tires in it and shit. And we were laughing, and all of a sudden I had a little crew, you know, just my whole paradigm, how I saw myself and how the world sort of changed the way it looked. And how do we repeat this? How do we create the same environment again so we can grow this experiment tomorrow? You know, and maybe we can grow this experiment a little bit more tonight, you know. And before the end of the night, you know, I had tried marijuana also. And we went in search of that after we got a little bit of malt liquor in us. We didn't, this is, remember, this is 1963, so there's, it's just starting to leak out around Southern California, but, It wasn't widespread or anything, so we had to go hunting. Anyway, what happened was it became my job. to do this again, to repeat this experiment over and over again. Do you have anything else we could add to it? Is there any other way that we could spice this up, possibly make this a little more exciting? I was that kind of guy. I just, you know, couldn't wait till the opportunity to, because for some reason I was so not a part of the world I was in, that I was really ready for anything, any gust of wind to pick me up and carry me, and I went right for it. And you know, I started then getting into trouble from it, but not when you're that age, the trouble is not really that deep, and you can usually claw your way out of it. And but you know, sooner or later. So it was fun, it was a lot of fun, and it was fun with consequences, is what I like to say. And I figured the consequences go with it. It was cool. It was an acceptable price to be paid for the kind of fun I was having, or I thought I was having. And but sooner or later, you know, the consequences start getting worse and more serious. You know, you're not as bulletproof as you thought we were, both legally and health-wise and everything. And all those things you thought you wouldn't lose, you know, you end up losing. And what happened for me was I continued to progress, and eventually I ended up losing my freedom on several different occasions. And for several periods of time, that was no longer acceptable to me. So I really decided that I was going to try something. Really didn't know what I was going to try. I'd been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and the other program when I was 18 years old, when I was out on bail for a particular crime that I committed. I was already out on bail to one group of government authorities, and I got arrested by another group. And I appeared before my Boy Scout master. He had been my Boy Scout master when I was growing up as a kid, and he tried to help me. He was one of those men, those elder men, you know, like coaches and ministers and things like that, that saw us and said, "You got real potential, son, and you're really, you know, screwing this up, man. Let me help you out, man," or whatever. But we wasn't having it, most of us. I know I wasn't. And I kind of just rebelled against it. You know, that was an automatic no-no for me, you know. So, but I remembered him, and all of a sudden he was sitting up there in the black robe, you know, and I said, he stopped the proceedings and he took me into his chambers. He told me when I was a kid, you know, he tried to, just one of those people that tried to father me, that I kind of resented that idea to begin with. I already got a father, although I don't know where he is, but I got one, goddammit. And, you know, and I don't need another one. And that's how smart my demonstration of my will over my life and how it turned out. So I was introduced to it through him, because he said, "I'm going to release you, you know, on bond without any bail money or anything, you know, it's an own recognizance bond." And but he handed me this little card, you know, and it had 90 little slots on it. And he said, "You got to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And it was the other fellowship, but it was a pink card. And there wasn't a lot of the other fellowship meetings. And it was in Southern California, so there was a lot of, AA was really well established. There was one on every corner there every night. So we would fill in the blanks with the AA meetings, so I was introduced to it early on. But I only was interested in it long enough to get out of the trouble I was in, and then start to get right back to the business of doing this without getting in any consequences. Which I kept thinking I had the formula for that, but it never really worked out. But anyway, as you guys know, I had the same story. I drank, you know, I screwed up everything, and I continued to drink more, you know. And I came to that place in the beginning of the agnostics, where he says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit drinking entirely. And I honestly wanted to. I had to, my freedom at stake, you know, my love life. It's just, I put everything in this spoon, I like to call it, because that's how one of the drugs I used was administered. But I really cooked up my whole life in it. I poured it all in that bottle, you know, and put everything in there. And so, I guess I really realized I can answer that question fully. You know, yes, I can't quit and stay stopped entirely. I always start again. And then the second half of the question says, or if when you're drinking you find you have little control over the amount you take. And I said, well, I have absolutely no control. I only stop when there's a set of handcuffs or I run out of money. You know, that's about the only two things that can really stop me. Or if you catch me red-handed, you know, and I got nowhere to run. But I'll lie about that, too. But anyway, when I answered that, it said, you may be suffering from something only a spiritual experience can conquer. And that's, like, really foreign. Oh, wait a minute, you're talking about something, you know. And so I struggled for a long time with that second step when I finally did admit that, you know, I needed this thing. And I went through all the same shit you all went through, and I all tried to figure it out, how I was going to do it and get away with it and make it work. And I never did. I never saw anybody ever else do it, you know. There were some that appeared like they were doing it for a little while, until something ran out. Who knows what it was, whether it was the money, their own patience, or whatever. Eventually, something ran out, and it didn't work. So I finally around the late 80s, I decided I got to really try to get this thing. And I struggled in and out of AA, because I really eventually gravitated mostly towards AA. And towards the end of the 80s, I was really, you know, wanting to try to get this thing, but it really took me until about the end of the 90s before I even got a year. I struggled for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and all those things I didn't want to do anything about because it was just good enough for me just to be not drinking. And so I would never do nothing about all that other stuff, and sneak up behind me and bite me right in the ass, and the next thing you know, I'd find something in my mouth, you know, and drink, most likely. And I finally worked myself in such a state that I was starting to come around here, because I started to realize that one place I was sort of hanging out, going to meetings, it wasn't really working all that well. A lot of people there, it appeared to me, were continuing to do the same thing I was doing, which was bouncing in and out. And so I started looking around, and I started coming here due to this young man right here, and Bob McCullough. And then one night I was in here, and after the night I met Dennis, and I remember I had about 4 months clean and sober, and I was real angry, to say the least. And I was cussing, and it was a men's meeting, so it was cool, but I was very angry. I wanted to kill something to eat right there. But about one or two people later, this guy says, I know what you feel. I know how you feel. It was a real short sentence, and I think I can help you. That was real short and simple sentence. but that I'd heard in 50 different ways spoken to me before, you know, from capable, nice people and stuff like that. But for some reason, he reached me. You know, what he said to me, it got me. And once I started working with him, which I did almost immediately, everything changed. And a lot about me changed. It was slow coming, but it did come. And but 2 years into this, close to 2 years, a year and a half actually, my brother decides to get really sick, and I a situation I wasn't prepared for. And after he died, I made it only a couple more months, because I didn't have the desire to do much of anything. And anyway, I went back and goofed around for another about a year, a little over that. And I remember struggling back through my treatment center, and I remember being in the detox ward there and being real sick and being there for 8 days, and that wasn't long enough. Because I was just a multi, had several habits going, along with my alcoholism, so I was pretty sick. And I come out after 8 days, and I wasn't really well yet. And so I still had some old ideas, and I started looking around in my closets, and anything I could find, you know, I stashed bottles here and there. And anyway, found myself a little something something, and the next thing you know, I'm back started again, and I'm telling myself, this doesn't look good. This is not good. You're going right back. You just got through, and it was ugly, my little detox experiment at that time. It was very physically ugly, and you know, just gross. Yeah, I need to tell you about it. But it was bad enough for me to go, you don't want to repeat that, and yet I was repeating it. And I finally just looked at myself. I caught a glimpse of myself in the rearview mirror just right, one of those times, you know, the sun just hits you and everything, only it's not a beautiful picture, it's really fucking ugly. And I saw myself and I said, it doesn't get much better than this, buddy. It's not going to get any better. And the very best you can hope for is to stay the same. I mean, to stay the same, I was completely and totally miserable, you know. I was dying. And, you know, I would turn my car around, and that particular time, what had led up to that is my wife had really, I'd been hiding all this stuff from her all along and lying to her all along, and it was one of those things where it doesn't really go with what a lot of people say, but when I was confronted with my alcohol and drug abuse, and that it was going to cost me my relationship with my wife, I was moved. You know, that was another one of those moments, like that moment when I met that dentist. And it was another one of those moments that I realized I didn't want to lose that. And so I had found something pure enough to say, to really totally reach my heart and say, you know, you want that more than you want this. And actually be willing to do something about it. And she was of the sort that wasn't going to stick around had I not done something. So I was motivated, you might say. But it became a personal motivation later. But anyway, I want to get on to the fact that I finally admitted that, again, at this time when I saw myself, and I decided then that I was going to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous the next morning. It was about 8:30 at night, and I picked myself up a half a pint of brandy on the way home, and I drank it down, and I went home and tried to get a 1 hour cat nap all throughout the night. I probably slept an hour and went to a 7:30 meeting. And I decided, I'm going to do this the way them guys were doing it. The way, no reinventing it, no saying, no, I don't have to do this, no negotiating at all. Just saying, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? And I'm extremely grateful because as soon as I hit that spot, they started lining up to help me. They started lining up to help me, you know. As soon as I hit that spot where I was open-minded and willing and teachable, they started lining up to show me what they did. And so did my interest start lining up because, you know, I was taken through the book by a man who believed in every single word in there, and I still echo that today. I knew that in order for me to survive, I was going to have to do something a little extraordinary because I'd had too many years of weaknesses, going in and out, and failures and failed attempts, etc. That I really knew I was really going to have to throw myself into this thing this time, wholeheartedly. And I was fortunate because I was around people that showed me that kind of example, like my current sponsor, who's been my sponsor for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years now, Ray? I don't know, something like that. But it's like I knew that I wouldn't be able to get away with the half measure that I'd always done before. It just wasn't going to work. I've done it so many times, but what started happening is I started going through the steps because I really couldn't have that real strong foundation of believing in God because, like I said, my youth kind of planted this idea that really God doesn't really come to our neighborhood that much, but it started changing my ideas about that started changing throughout Alcoholics Anonymous because things just didn't fit into my life anymore. The old ideas didn't fit anymore. They didn't work. They didn't achieve the same results that I was having before. So I had, you know, when I did 4 and 5 and listed my resentments and talked about them with somebody else, and then I started saying, well, I'll never be entirely ready, so I thought I could bark my way out of that one. And but the more I started living on, I started realizing that I was unable to continue to live the way I've been living before. It just didn't fit into my definitions anymore. It didn't fit into my character. It wasn't the type of person that people I hung out with or anything. It just didn't fit anymore. And that's really, I kind of outlived the stuff because I stayed here long enough and I realized in order to stay here one more minute, I wanted to let go of this one, you know, and because it's killing me. And in the process of letting go, I realized that it helped another person, which motivated me more. And you sort of get moved by this stuff because it starts to work for you and you realize, this is working for you, it's working for the people around you. And other men in the groups that you attend and women too are affected by your growth or your lack of growth sometimes. And it's like you start to realize that it's easier to replace this stuff with some of these basic ideas like they're talking about, like namely forgiveness. I had a beef with the world. And as far as I'm concerned, never really got satisfied, you know. But the thing is, I learned piece by piece, and I'm still learning to let it off the hook, you know, and realize, you know, just let it off the hook. If nobody gained anything from it, I had some sort of supposed reward attached to these defects, that something I thought I was going to get or something I thought I was getting. Most people hold on to stuff because they are attached to what they're getting from it, you know. And you don't want to let go of it because you're letting go of those things that you get from it or things that you think you get from it. And the more I began to see by letting go, I ended up getting more, you know. And it made it so much easier for me to forgive. And, you know, and I've had these problems physically because of my abuse. I think I, you know, I opened myself up physically to be harmed by some of the things that I did. And I went into this thing with such ferocity from the very beginning that I didn't even think about what it was costing me in terms of my health or anything else. And I remember, you know, I've been sober over 13 years, but I've had cirrhosis, stage 4 cirrhosis, and hepatitis C virus, and God brought me through that. I have economic insecurity. I had all those things, and I've been brought through those things, not necessarily always in the style to which I thought I deserved, but I've always been brought through, and I've always been provided for in a way, not so much materially, in a way spiritually and emotionally, and the amount of relationships and the way my relationship have affected me, and how I've seen that I've affected other men that I didn't even know I'd affected. And it was like, this program has given me so much more than I ever would have ever asked for, because I really didn't think that that was going to be a byproduct of it. I really just wanted to stop drinking and stop getting into trouble. And but I realized I needed so much more, and I threw myself into the step and helping others. And it was very easy because I didn't live very far from my treatment center, and I found that when I went there, that they liked me, and that they would come up to me afterward and say, "I get more out of your little group than I get out of the whole class all week." And I'm not happy that they didn't get anything out of the other stuff, but I'm pleased that somehow they heard something in what I was saying. And when that started happening, that really switched on this switch for me, that I go, I got to keep doing this. And this is a marvelous way, you know. Bill talks about it in his story. His wife and himself threw themselves into this work. And why would you throw yourself into this work if it wasn't, you know, had some kind of really profound effect on you? Otherwise, you would just, you know, we volunteered a little bit here and there. But they threw themselves into this work, which tells me, you know, it's another part of that direction that they said at the beginning book, beginning of the book, that the main purpose of this book is to show other alcoholics precisely how we've recovered. And I pretty much tried to pay real close attention to that. It was so much fun to be able to go down there all the time. They had meetings there all the time. And I would always walk away there with a really full and grateful heart. And another thing I did, to copy the men that went before me. My sponsor had a meeting in his home where he was taking men through the book for a number of years, 20-some years before I met him. And I eventually found myself in the position where I had a couple of sponsees, and I had nowhere to go, and I got tired of meeting them on the porch at Triangle. So I said, we're going to start our own little meeting at the house, and I got a couple of guys I think would be interested in coming. And that meeting has grown to be not quite as big as Dennis's, but it's been in existence for 13 years. And we've gone through the book. You know, several hundred guys have gone through that book there, and I was grateful to be a part of that. And then the members, you know, sift in and out, and then they come back, and so that was one of the things that I did. I just kept seeing what you guys were doing, and I incorporated a little, each and every bit of it, because as I continued to show up, I found that I really was not going to be able to stay if I didn't start doing some of this stuff, you know, that I really wasn't going to have the kind of feeling that they had, and therefore I wasn't going to stay, because I really needed something. That's why when I found that alcohol to begin with, I responded so quickly to that, because I really needed something. When I came here, I really needed something, you know, and I found vastly way more than I ever expected. And the funny thing is I feel real comfortable and close to a lot of you people in here, and I get that everywhere I go, and it's reflected back on me in such a way that until I got sick, I couldn't really see that, because I was so obsessed all the time about my own fears and everything, and I couldn't really see that. And it's been a blessing these last couple of years. You know, 2 years ago I was diagnosed with a very serious problem, and they gave me less than a year to live. And today's the 18th, is it?
Yep.
Today is 22 months. This is 22 months of being here with you people has been an eye opener for me, and it continues to be. And I hope I'm going to keep coming back. I hope you guys do too. I wanted to read you one little quick thing that I had set aside. If I can find it just quick enough here. Let's see. But patience hardens it is, helps us outlast our preconceptions. This is how tired soldiers all out of ammo can discover through their inescapable waiting that they have no reason to hurt each other. It's the same with tired lovers and with hurtful and tiresome friends. Given enough time, most of our enemies cease to be our enemies, because waiting allows us to see ourselves in them. Patience devastates us with the truth that, in essence, when we fear another, we fear ourselves. When we distrust another, we distrust ourselves. When we hurt another, we hurt ourselves. So when hurt or afraid or confused, when feeling urgent to find your place on this earth, hard as it is, wait. And things, as you fear them, will, more often than not, shrink into the hard, irreplaceable beauty of things as they are. Mark Nepo, thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you for passing it on. Done your part, and I know you'll keep doing your part. Ray, would you get me another chips?
Sure.
They're right up here, ready for you to go.
My name's Ray Cowan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Good to be here. Em, thank you so much. You know, you talked about 7-8 years. Those are some of the most inspiring times I've ever had in my life. And I thank you for being with me. In AA, we had the chip system. We never forget where we come from. We'd like to take it back and give somebody a chance to live again. Anybody for a white chip? 30 days? And nights? 90? 90 days? Bunch of old-timers. 6 months. Nothing yellow about staying sober for 6 months. 9 months? And any takers for a year or multiples thereof?
Hey y'all, my name is Kenny Thomas. I'm a real alcoholic. Sobriety date July 14th, 2007. It's 9 years. much. I really just want to thank y'all. I came in here. A lot of what I've heard from him was here when I got here. And thank you for everything. No idea. I got a lot I want to talk about. I want to, but right now, what I want to do is share every single moment with you that got me to this point. That's not going to happen. Pretty much what it was, I came in here crying, hurting. Your socks are matching, mine weren't. I wanted, there's all kinds of goofy stuff going on, but I wanted to not drink get high anymore. You've shown me that. You've introduced me to a God of my own understanding and misunderstanding. And I got in contact with that by these steps and with the help of a sponsor. And now other guys, I don't know why, asked me to help them out the same way. They're crazy, so am I, so thank you.
How about John?
How about you?
Hey, y'all. I remember, I'm checking the treatment. There are people there like a week or 10 days, and I'm like, how the hell did you get that long? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I'm losing my mind. Because I stopped. I tried to stop so many times over it, but I never could. Until I went there, and then I started going to meetings, and I found other people who've been through what I've been through. And thought the same kind of crazy things that I thought. And that's when I learned I can't do it by myself. This chip is your chip. Everyone in here. Because, I mean, I tried so many times. I come from a long line of alcoholics. And like him, I use every drug I could ever find. But today I'm free. And this is, can't believe this. This is 31 years. I'm going to say one thing real quick, and that is, it's been 31 years since I had 31 beers. Now I'm clean and serene. Found a better way in AA. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Way to go, John. All right. Hopefully, we will get Kenny before the year's out to come back and tell you everything that he didn't get to tell us tonight. Okay. Thanks, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers Meeting. Following me, feeling like.
ever feel from age.